It's the Elephant in the Dome, the official podcast of the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. I'm Trace Yellis with Senate Republican Leader John Braun. The big, beautiful bill. What does it mean for Washington? Well, here's what the governor says. Governor Ferguson said, on Medicaid, it is impossible to overstate just how devastating this legislation will be for Washingtonians. This morally bankrupt decision will cause our most vulnerable Washingtonians to lose their health care coverage and likely force hospital closures across the state, all to pay for tax breaks for the richest Americans. Here's what Governor Ferguson said on food stamps. This bill takes food from our most vulnerable Washingtonians to give tax breaks to the ultra wealthy. And on green energy, Governor Ferguson said, this bill is anything but beautiful for Washington. It's a fossil fuel wish list that penalizes clean energy and favors pollution. Well, Senator Braun, what do you think?
Well, I think that Governor Ferguson is just trying to make make politics out of the whole thing instead of really talking about, you know, the pros and cons of the bill. And we could go through any of those. You know, there's of course more detail, and we have to be careful. Some of this is federal work; it's not legislative. But the governor is talking about it at the state level. Just talking about Medicaid. By far, the biggest savings in Medicaid is from the work requirements. And what that means is, if you're able-bodied, I think the ages are between 19 and 60, meaning you're fit, you have no disabilities, and you have no children, and you're on Medicaid, it implements a work requirement, and not a big work requirement. They say you have to work 20 hours a week, or volunteer 20 hours a week, or be in training 20 hours a week. And there are quite a few exemptions to that 20 hours a week. So this isn't a high bar. This is just saying you can't sit at home on the couch. You got to go try to work. And that's not an unreasonable requirement. It's broadly popular across political lines. And that is, I think it's over two-thirds of the savings come from that requirement alone.
The governor says it will cause our most vulnerable Washingtonians to lose their health care coverage. Will it?
That is fundamentally not true. The reforms put in here, they don't affect, you know, folks, the children. They don't affect the elderly. They don't affect folks who are disabled. They don't affect single moms or single fathers. So he's just flat out misstating the requirements. And what they're doing is they're trying to preserve Medicaid. Look, we've many of us, myself included, have fought to make sure Medicaid is properly funded at the state level. We recognize that it was created to help seniors, to help the disabled, to help single parents, to help children. But to do that, you have to run it well, meaning you can't allow folks who don't really need the program to burn up the resources that are needed by other folks in our state. So I think that the governor's misguided on this. He's taking real, reasonable, broadly popular reforms and tried to paint it in a negative way for political purposes.
He says it will likely force hospital closures across the state, will it?
Well, just to be clear, this is the same governor that just signed tax bills that will likely force hospital closures across the state. This is the same governor that signed the public employees benefits and school employees benefits bill that will take millions of dollars out of rural hospitals in particular across the state. So it's a little bit hypocritic to say that this is somehow going to affect hospitals. Now, I do think there's risk, and I think the folks that put the bill together recognize that. They do a couple things that are important. It's about $50 billion over the next 5 years, so $10 billion a year, and reasonable expectation that, you know, a couple hundred million of that is going to come towards Washington per year. That's a pretty big, you know, to help get through this transition. And most of the challenges to hospitals generally and to rural hospitals in particular are this provider tax. You know, for years, Washington has done this. We've hospitals have taxed themselves and then turned it in, and they've gotten a matching federal grant. It's a really bad policy. And that's not me saying it's bad policy. Bright economists of all political persuasions understand that taxing yourself to get a higher match from the federal government is just a funky way to fund our hospitals. We've done it because that was allowed. But even when this was first contemplated, folks talked about the risk that this is bad policy. At some point, the federal government is going to undo it, and we're going to have to deal with the fallout. But what they've done in this case is they said, we're going to change this over time. We're going to change it 0.5% per year from, I think the maximum is 6% down to 3.5%. So it's over 5 years, they're going to ratchet this down and give states the time to adjust. And we should adjust. Look, here's the thing. If you look at the savings that the federal government is going to get from some of these reforms, those are also going to lead to savings for the state. Just better accountability for Medicaid money. We ought to take that savings and roll it into a bill. In fact, we're working on a bill right now we hope to introduce pretty soon. We can't drop it until December, but start talking about it. A bill that will take some of that savings at the state level and invest it back in to our hospitals, our rural hospitals. And I would encourage our Democratic colleagues to come alongside and help us protect rural hospitals. They weren't much interested in that in this last session where they taxed them and they changed their negotiating criteria with our public sector insurance programs. But maybe since they're talking about helping hospitals now, they'll work with us to direct some of this new savings we're going to see as a result of this federal legislation to help hospitals in the future.
You keep on talking about savings. Governor Ferguson said he was considering calling a special session because this is going to cost the state so much and he doesn't know how we're going to afford it. I mean, I haven't heard you talk about the cost of especially in terms of Medicaid related to this big, beautiful bill.
Yeah, well, I want to be clear on the cost. There are both savings and there are costs, but they're costs based on policy decisions. And we could, you know, the real question is, as some of this federal legislation goes into effect, does the state decide, do the Democratic majorities decide to backfill that? If they don't, there is no cost, no need for a special session. But more fundamentally, I think the very first item on the things that happen as a result of this federal legislation don't occur until December of 2026. That's a year and a half from now. We will have been through one full session. There'll be lots of times to adjust. So again, the idea that the governor is going to call a special session to deal with this emergent crisis is just pure politicking. These are things that have been legitimate concerns by people of both parties for many years. They're not surprises. It was well debated, well publicized, and it was staggered. It was put into place over a time period that will allow states like Washington to respond reasonably if we take that approach instead of, you know, fear-mongering as a result of the bill.
Governor Ferguson on food stamps, he says it will take food from our most vulnerable Washingtonians. Will it?
Again, he is fear-mongering with the food stamp program. It's called the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. SNAP is the acronym. And the way that works right now is those benefits are 100% paid by the federal government, and the administration of that program is 100% paid by the federal government. It wasn't intended that way. That's just how it's been for a while. And what this bill from the federal government, the big, beautiful bill, does is it shifts a small percentage of the administration fees from the federal government to the state. Now, understand, this is state employees who are administrating this, and now the state's going to have to pay for part of the bill. And it also says, and I think this is a pretty smart reform, it says if states don't have a higher percentage of misallocation of these funds, meaning they provide the resource to someone who doesn't qualify, then they're going to have to pay for some of it. Now, in this area, Washington has actually been pretty good. The limit that the bill says is if your mispayment is under 6%, then there's no change. Federal government continues to pay the bill. Washington, to their credit, has been right around 6% for the last 5 years, minus 1 year where they popped up to 9%. So essentially what we're saying is if you run this program well, the federal government's going to pay the full bill. So go run the program well and we'll be fine.
It also has some work requirements like Medicaid, right?
That's true. That's absolutely true. And again, we've seen work requirements do good things in our state and across the country. There is nothing wrong with encouraging folks to work or requiring folks to work. Earned success is good for many reasons. The idea that we should provide this type of assistance, whether it's Medicaid or food stamps, to folks who are able-bodied, no dependents, fit, able to work, and require them to go work up to, you know, at least 20 hours a week is not a high bar. That's very reasonable. And if you look at the bill, you know, it can be work, it can be training for work, and it can be looking for work. And there are a bunch of exceptions where it makes sense that people might have, you know, vulnerable people might be otherwise affected. They did put a lot of thought into this to make sure that we get, you know, folks who are able to back to work and more successful without hurting the most vulnerable. I think that was well done, and we should support it and encourage it rather than fearmonger about it.
Well, you hear with both Medicaid and food stamps and welfare, that sort of thing, that these work requirements, sometimes the paperwork is difficult to fill out and people may get confused or just may not do it. And then people who actually qualify for these programs don't get them simply because they weren't able to fill out the required paperwork.
It's amazing to me that they would say that, right? This is the party who wants more government, more bureaucracy, more regulation. Everything they do is adding more paperwork. But now it's convenient for them to say, oh, this is too much paperwork. We can't possibly do that. Think of all the things you do in your life that you have to check in regular or pay monthly. And just think about utilities, you got to pay them monthly. We're asking folks to verify that they are still eligible twice a year. To continue to get this service. Or we're asking the state government to verify in coordination with the federal government and other states that someone isn't signed up in two different states. And we just had this discussion during a recent session. In Washington state, we spent an extra $150 million on people who were enrolled in Medicaid in Washington state and also enrolled in Medicaid in another state. That's $150 million that could go to other vulnerable people, to other important services that we just wasted because somehow the paperwork's too hard. I just don't buy it. This is very manageable, very reasonable. If you put it in the context of all of the many things we do in our lives, this is not a hard requirement. And it's particularly frustrating to hear this claim from the folks who, in every other case, are insistent on adding more requirements, adding more regulation, and adding more bureaucracy.
On green energy, the governor said it's a fossil fuel wish list that penalizes clean energy and favors pollution. Does it do that?
What it does, and it's super important in Washington. You've heard us talk for several years about affordability. Washington just keeps getting more and more unaffordable. I think we're the fourth most expensive state in the country right now. And one of the key drivers in that, thanks to state policy, to the Climate Commitment Act, to the Clean Energy Transformation Act, these are all driving up energy costs for our citizens across the state, making Washington unaffordable. We talk about his concern for folks living in poverty, the working poor, or just the middle class. If you're really concerned about that, let's stop making their world more expensive. And one of the most important ways you do that is by helping making energy affordable. This just makes energy more affordable on a more platforms and more level scale.
Do you think our state is in a good position moving forward when it comes to energy, or do you think there's work to be done?
Oh, I think there's a lot of work to be done. We've had this push for many years now to transition to electric, but we haven't made we don't have the generation capacity. We're enormously blessed in Washington. We have these hydro resources that are very clean, very reliable, very dependable. But beyond that, we're kind of stuck. It's in my district. This year, we're going to close down the last coal plant in Washington state. I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing, we have not made any real plans to build a replacement. So we're shutting down generation facilities. We're refusing to allow what we call dirty energy imported from other states, but we're not building the energy to replace that. At the same time, we're increasing demand by switching more and more activities to electrical. We're setting ourselves absolutely up for failure. And if the goal is to transition to electrical over time, we have to do it in a way that we can not have energy shortage in our state. That's bad for the economy, but more importantly, it's got bad on the personal level when folks go without energy or will go without energy if we don't correct this path. And to do that, there is no magic. We can't turn on the solar cell or turn on the windmill and expect to have full-time, consistent, reliable energy. It just doesn't work. In addition to be more expensive, which is a different problem, it's just not reliable. We're going to have to do other things. We're going to have to face the facts that if we want to provide cheap, clean, available energy to our citizens, we're going to have to be more broadly, think more broadly, to include things like natural gas plants.
Overall, this big, beautiful bill, does it help Washington or hurt Washington? Democrats have been, many of them been saying over and over and over again, it definitely hurts Washington. What's your take on, or is it, or is it neutral for Washington?
Oh, I believe it's a good thing for Washington. Now, there will be some change required, no doubt about it. You know, I think the account, we talked about a number of things, the accountability and the work requirements for food stamps and for Medicaid, those will ultimately be a good thing. It will force us to hold people accountable, to spend those resources wisely to help the people who need it most. And I, as I said earlier, many of us have fought for proper funding at the state level for Medicaid. We need to continue to do that, but we need to, the only way we're going to be able to do that is if we have clear accountability, if we enforce the rules. So I think long term, that's going to be a good thing. Now, we need to be it with eyes wide open. We need to do it in a way that we don't unintentionally harm our rural hospitals, and there's ways we can take action to prevent that. But it's a good thing. And there's a whole bunch of other things that, you know, are, you know, we talked about energy. I think long term, a very good thing. One of the things we didn't talk about is the ag policy. Some really good policy in here. You know, while at the state level, our agriculture has fought for 3 years now to fix the issue with the Climate Commitment Act and fuel for agriculture activities. In spite of the fact that it's clearly in law, our Department of Ecology has refused to exempt agricultural work. And this bill takes us in the other direction, providing significant advantages to ag. And ag is a big economic driver in our state, particularly on the east side. We should be very happy with that. And it goes on and on. There's a lot of places in this bill that are going to be good long-term for the state of Washington. If we can get over the fear-mongering coming from the Democratic majority and from the Democratic governor, and just look at what it really does for working people across the state of Washington, I think we're going to be pretty pleased.
The Senate Republican Caucus has three priorities. One of those priorities, and one that we've been really talking about a lot the last couple of years, especially this last year, is affordability. How does this big, beautiful bill affect affordability here in Washington?
Yeah, that's a very interesting, good question. Very good question. And put it in context, we just got through, in my view, the worst session in my legislative career in terms of affordability for average Washingtonians. The Democratic majority passed $13 billion over the next 4 years in what they would normally call pretty regressive taxes, meaning taxes that hurt working families, taxes that hurt the middle class, taxes that hurt folks living in poverty the most. And this bill, like, we can't go into the, you know, we can't talk a lot about the federal details. This is just the opposite. It provides significant tax reduction for working families, whether it's tips or Social Security for elderly. You know, the list goes on and on. So it's like night and day. What we're doing here in Washington, I think, is absolutely the wrong path for affordability here in Washington. And this bill gives us some good news at the federal level.
If the Democrats in January, or in a special session, if Governor Ferguson calls one, say, listen, we're going to figure out ways to help some of these people who they say are going to lose coverage. How will Republicans approach this situation with, especially with Medicaid?
I just love them. I'd like to hear who they think isn't being covered. The bill very clearly continues coverage for the folks that Medicaid was created for elderly, for disabled, for children, or for single parents, for folks living in poverty. None of those folks are directly affected. And if they are, well, then I would join them. Let's take some of the savings we're going to see, particularly from the work requirements in the bill, and redirect that to cover folks who might have inadvertently been left out. But from what I've seen so far, what I know of the bill and what I know of how that is implemented at the state level, and remember, Medicaid is a state-run program. It's just funded by the federal government. I think we're not going to see that. I don't think we're going to see truly vulnerable people being left out. It's not what the bill does. It just isn't.
I guess just to wrap up, what are your feelings and thoughts about not just with the Big Beautiful Bill, but in general, Medicaid and food stamps, are these programs you generally support?
Absolutely. And it's very troubling. I mean, the fear mongering out there and the insinuations that Republicans, you know, don't care about vulnerable folks in our state, it's 100% untrue. These are important programs designed to help our most vulnerable. I've spoken several times about this. But if you're going to do that and you're going to do that well, you have to preserve that money. You can't waste that money. You can't allow unfettered access. You have to make sure that you spend it on the folks who really have the need. And that means some level of accountability. That means some level of efficiency in running it, whether it's making sure the right payments are made in the in the food stamps program, or making sure that able-bodied adults have some requirement to go to work at least 20 hours a week to get this benefit. I think that is reasonable and appropriate if we're going to maintain these programs to serve the very people they were intended to serve long term. It's not a perfect bill. If I was you know, designing it my way, we would have done things different. But it's a very thoughtful bill, and it's a bill that tries to make real change, real long-term change, based on the desires of the people across the state and across the country to make these programs work better, to make these programs work more efficiently.
That's Senate Republican Leader John Braun. I'm Trace Yellis. This is The Elephant in the Dome, the official podcast of the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus.